Blog Talk Radio.
LatenightPoetsAtAllPoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we do have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I've brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. It's fall, and about now is the time when we go into the fields and look at the labors that we've had over the course of the year and start to reap the harvest. And sometimes that's a harvest in the sense of a relationship, of a job. Perhaps it's just literally a bountiful feast that we get to sit down and enjoy with our family. But we're going to dive into these works tonight, and I'm so excited to do so. And speaking of guests, we have a couple on the line. First, I'd like to welcome Pam to the show. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. Looking forward to reading and commenting on poetry and hanging out with you and other cool poets.
I'm super excited, and I'm so glad you're here. It's going to be a fun night that I think has a variety of topics. I know we've got a couple that kind of play with the idea of harvest, and others that kind of dive into it. So it should be really fun. And also, we do have Robbie on the line, I believe. How are you tonight, Robbie?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm glad that you could be here with us. It's been a hot minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to still get into the shows whenever I can.
Well, I always love it when you're able to be here, so thanks for joining us. And then finally, I believe this is Wayne.
Yes, it is. How you doing, Victoria?
Hey, Wayne.
Robbie, Pam.
I'm good.
Great to be here.
So we've got a full house, and it's going to be a blast. And so I'm going to start us off. I think we have a piece from you, don't we?
I think so.
I think so, too. Let me go grab it. And would you mind?
Okay.
I've got it. Would you mind starting off our show tonight by reading your work?
Don't mind a bit.
All right. It's up whenever you're ready.
This is one I hadn't seen for a while. It's called It Takes Time. It goes like this. It takes time to reach the top. There are days you have to stop. Try doing what is right every day. Keep inner peace along the way. Everything you do, take your time. Believing yourself, it's not a crime. Don't let the bad times get you down. Keep your feet on the ground. Things you do now will help later. Pay no attention to the lowly hater. Rome wasn't built in a day. Don't let anything get in your way. Ideals aren't from mortar and bricks. A lot of people like the trick. Keep your soul clean and do what's right. Then one day, you stand in the light. Yeah.
Fantastic read. And I love this, right, because it really speaks of the journey. So often we talk about reaping what we sow, and we think of that in this short time span. We like to think of things as instant gratification, if you will. And this reminds us of the journey that it is, the time that it takes to get where we're going, the idea that it's not going to come overnight. It's not going to come in a day. But even that, even as we're on this journey, recognize and appreciate the steps that you take that help you reach your goal. Recognize and appreciate
right.
that there's going to be people who look down on you, and there's going to be people who make your life difficult. But it's not a reflection upon how successful you are. Really, it's a reflection upon them. I love this because it really brings it inward and reminds us to enjoy the time it takes to reach that harvest, to reach that goal. And for that, I just thought it was stunning. So thank you so much for sharing this, Wayne. I truly appreciate
you're
it.
Welcome. You're welcome.
And it was so great.
Great time,
yeah. And it was so great to hear it in your voice. So I'm so glad you were able to call in to read this for us.
You're welcome.
And Robbie,
great comment.
What do you think of this?
Pardon?
Oh, what did you think of this poem, Robbie?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I didn't quite hear if you called me or not. It was as soon as I heard keep your feet on the ground, what came to my mind immediately was that this was a grounding poem. It's very much a keeping your feet on the ground to move forward sort of a sentiment. Eh? And so, and I think about personal energy and personal direction in that a lot. And so when I heard that's immediately the overall impression I got, that it was a very grounding poem that way, you know, to kind of remind you to move forward in a very direct manner to get to the things that you want.
Right. Stay on the right path.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I love that comment too, because it reminds us that in this journey, as we begin to succeed, as we begin to reach our goals, a lot of time we can get that inflated ego. And as the saying goes, pride comes before the fall. So I love how you described it as a grounding poem, kind of that reminder of you're still on this journey, you're still on this path. That was just a stunning, stunning comment, Robbie. Thank you for that. And Pam, what did you think?
Thanks, Robbie, for coming.
You bet.
I really like this. First of all, it's good to hear from you, Wayne. As always, you've got wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that you take the harvest in a different direction. Like you look at the idea of harvesting dreams, harvesting goals, you know, and I like how it has that, you know, matter-of-fact type approach of how, you know, that everything, we're using that sentence, everything you do, take your time, believe in yourself, it's not a crime. You know, that very, very matter-of-fact, very just really good advice there. I also like where you say ideas aren't from mortar and brick. A lot of people like to trick. Keep your soul clean, do what's right, then one day you'll stand in the light. And to me, that's such wonderful advice, and that a lot of people like the trick line makes me think about how easily people are caught up into, like, pyramid schemes to try to make a quick buck. Here what you remind us is that when it comes, whether it's, you know, whether it's however you treat people and whether it's a, you know, a hobby, a job or whatever, a career, never take the shortcut and never do anything that you'd look back in shame at. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I learned it the hard way.
And that was a stunning comment, Pam. And again, I appreciate that comment because it reminds us that often there are going to be those people that are going to have those get-rich-quick schemes. There's going to be that snake oil idea. But staying true to yourself, staying true to your values, and not taking that easy road, that's how those goals are truly met, that long-term success is truly found. And I agree. I love that this is a harvesting poem in and of its own right, but not necessarily in the sense of a bountiful harvest for the fall. It's just kind of that reminder of the goals that we seek and the direction that we wish to take in life. So thank you for that wonderful comment and a wonderful poem, Wayne. I appreciate it. All right. And up next, we're going to read Daylight Slips to Gray by White Tiger. And Robbie, would you give this one a read?
Okay, I'll just open in my new tab here. Oops, sorry. It's just taking me a moment to... I'm just doing this on my tablet, so it's a little different. Ah, here we go. Daylight slips to gray. Sunrise dappled, scattered beams stream through stratus clouds, draped upon the peaks of mountains like a silky shroud. Crabby apples crinkled up like wrinkled yellow skin, blotches over soggy flesh that's rotting deep within. Flowing fields of golden flora frozen to the ground, morning crystals, diamond dew now twinkle, trinkle, melt. Autumn grips the landscape as the daylight slips to gray, the moon becomes a spotlight that'll set the winter stage.
Fantastic read, Robbie. Thank you so much. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts on this one?
I really like the way he staggers his stanzas. And, you know, just absolutely amazing imagery. I particularly like how he brings in the crabby apples crinkled up like wrinkled yellow skin, blotches over soggy flesh that's rotting deep within. Rhymes really nicely. And the reason I like it is because it goes on the darker side of autumn imagery. You know, and there's beautiful imagery here too, like the sunrise dappled scattered beams that definitely make you think of autumn. But I like that he reminds us that because autumn is a time of transition, you know, that there are those when the leaves start to fall off, when the apples start to rot, you know, that there are those ugly moments, especially near the end of autumn. So I thought that was just definitely a very intriguing part and very well done.
Oh, that was such a wonderful comment. And you're right, he does have this beautiful imagery, but he does hint at the darker things. He hints at the death, if you will, that follows in the transition into that frozen moment of life called winter. Just a stunning comment, Pam. Thank you. And Wayne, what did you think of this?
I thought, I like the short sentences and the stanzas. They say so much in just a few, in a quick fashion. There's some alliteration in this brevity too, like flowing fields of golden flora frozen to the ground. That's got a little alliteration in it, and it sounds wonderful. And all the way through this poem, he's got great praises in it, and each little bit of short praise means a whole lot. Says a whole lot. Did a good job of this. I liked it a whole lot. Good job.
Absolutely, and you're right. He does use a really effective. He has several effective poetic devices that he uses through it. Like Pam said, the staggering of the stanzas, the alliteration that he kind of brings into it. What is it? Onomatopoeia for the sound. So we have like the crinkled idea, soggy. It has a very textural feel to it. And so I think that's probably what I find so intriguing about this, is that he roots us in this moment. And it's not just in the idea of fall, but it's even in the idea of how fall shows that transition, like Pam mentioned, the fading away of life, the green fading to the yellows, to the oranges, to the reds, the browns, and eventually the grays. It's not just the light that slips away. It's all the colors of life that leaves us in an almost black and white atmosphere that we call winter. Even the moon becoming that spotlight shows how the golden rays of the sun are less, leaving us with that black and white contrast of the night. I think this is just a wonderful piece that grounds you in that moment and yet makes us recognize what's happening there in that transition. It's not just these beautiful colors. We are watching the slow process of death, of sleep, of hibernation, and he beautifully captures that with not just the colors, but again, those sounds, the textures, and even the reminder that at the end of all these beautiful colors comes a little bit of rot before it freezes over. It's just a stunning way. And Robbie, having read it, what did you think?
Well, just as Pam had mentioned, I like the second stanza there about the crinkled apples and the rot. And the thing is that I think we forget about sometimes about how nature works, because even though it's an ugly image, it's an image of, I guess you could say, both necessity and benefit, because, you know, the nutrients, it's the nutrients going back into the ground, right? And that sort of thing. And it's kind of like in nature when you have all the things that, like the insects that eat weird things like, well, like poop and all that. I mean, without those things around, I mean, we'd be, you know, like without bats eating up all the mosquitoes, we'd be just, you know, drowning in mosquitoes. And without all the decomposing insects and all that, you know, we'd be having all that trouble in that. And so when you have that in a poem about autumn, that's very much goes directly to that point, that that it's that whole, it's embracing that whole process. Like you said, it's putting in a little bit of that dark. And I think that recognizing that is, and putting that in the poem in a textural way, like you said, really works well, because it makes it more, of a easy transition for somebody to read into, like visually and just as a poem.
Oh, Ravi, that was such a stunning comment. And I really appreciate, too, that as much as there's this, kind of like what Pam mentioned, that decaying that comes after all this beauty of fall, that there's still that balance in life, you know, the bats, they eat the mosquitoes, so we're not just drained of all our blood constantly. Or the animals that eat the decay, that eat the rot, that put those nutrients back into the ground so that life can continue. I appreciate that reminder that this is still a cycle. As much as this poem is kind of focusing on the fall and it fading away to the winter, there is that reminder that even after all of this, something beautiful is going to come again, that spring is going to come again. So I think that was just a really stunning comment. Thank you so much for that, Robbie. And up next we have While You Were Picking Apples by D.E. Navarro. And I'll give this one a read. While you were picking apples, full moon storm, the only safe harbor, a spare bedroom. Little ones rise early, sail into a wet new day. Children jump in the sound of autumn mud puddles. Gray footprints up and down the hall's spin cycle. Blue feet, the sock drawer half empty, whole bushels full, soggy shoes race toward hot mold cider. End poem. And Robbie, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
Well, it's nice to see the sort of the pattern, again, like we were talking about in the other poem, where you see the sort of staggered, visually staggered stanzas here. And I like the colors in here, like the blue feet, sock drawer half empty, gray footprints, and it's nice to see a little bit of a lighter, brighter color, contrast against a gray footprint. And again, I think this is going to be with a lot of the poems for fall, just because of the type of subject that it is. It's this is another very textural poem. Soggy shoes race toward hot mulled cider, and with that last stanza, I like the feel of that very traditional fall time fare, because that's the sort of thing that we look to forward the most in fall time, is things like cider and pumpkin and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, and I love that comment, because you're right, this does talk a little bit about that brighter side, but it still has that textural aspect to it that reminds us that perhaps it is not as sunny as we've been enjoying in the summer, again, with that idea of soggy, and it gives the sense of cold, and just kind of that joyful idea of children playing, but now they're playing inside. It's just those little extra details that let us really capture this moment of autumn. That was just a stunning comment, Robbie. Thank you. And Wayne, what did you think of this?
I think it did a lovely job. It even makes the wet footprints from the kids sound romantic. It puts the reader in a warm, relaxed family mood, and he blends the rain and autumn together perfectly. It's a touching poem and written well. And I noticed he's a series of haiku stanzas to make the poem. And I haven't seen it done much before. They all work together real well. He did a good job of this. I liked it.
Oh, that was such a stunning comment. In fact, I didn't even think of the stanzas almost like a haiku, and yet they are. And so I love that. I love that attention that you brought to that, because you're right. Each of these stanzas could very easily be read on their own. They're value and beautiful and complete in their own right, but still they're woven into this work that creates this beautiful image. That was a really stunning catch there, Wayne. Thank you for that. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, well, I think the reason they can be read separately is because I believe they're all, it's a form that utilizes haikus together. I think that's, if I'm reading the AN right, the renge is a type of poem that uses haikus, so that probably is why they work well as being read separately and together. Also, I did want to point out that this was a collaboration done with the poet Red Sun, so I just wanted to mention their name, because both poets should make sure to get credit for their work. And this just has absolutely stunning in its imagery, and I like how it brings us to the innocence of children, jumping in those autumn mud puddles, and then brings us to the work that mother has to go through when all the socks get, dirty and wet and have to be washed and put together. And then to end on the mulled apple cider, I feel like that even though it doesn't say it directly, I feel just by bringing that imagery into that line, you get the idea of the family hanging out together after a long day of playing outside in the cool weather. So excellent write and very well done.
And what a stunning comment, Pam. First, thank you for pointing out that this is a collaboration, because you're right. Poets should have credit where credit is due. And with it being a collaboration, they definitely both deserve that credit. So I appreciate you mentioning that. But also that idea that he brings us, or they brought us back to that family moment, to the warming of the heart with the cider, that intimate moment where everyone's sort of calming and reheaving their bones. I think it's such a stunning image, and you're right, it really does give that perfect touch to the end of the poem. I love this piece because of that imagery, because of the way in which they've captured what a day can be like, the idea of this storm, which isn't always something you see in the summer, but this storm that kind of sweeps the heat away and makes everything cold and wet and foggy. And I got a little bit of a giggle of children jump into the sound of autumn mud puddles. Because as some know, I have two children. And my youngest definitely is drawn to the dirt and drawn to the mud. And any chance she gets, she's there grabbing dirt, making mud, whatever she can. Whereas my husband and I took our children to the pumpkin patch, like a little mini market kind of pumpkin patch, yesterday. And my eldest barely stepped in a mud puddle, and we had to go back to the car to change her shoes and wipe off her foot because it was just too much. She does not do dirt. And so I love this because I could picture my youngest, who so gleefully runs into those mud puddles, is jumping in them, watching the way the water splashes. And it feels so vivid and real. And then I can also see the contrast of my eldest just feel like, nah, not my thing. I'm good. But either way, at the end of the day, now is the time when they get hot cider. Now is the time when we're letting them have hot chocolate with a little bit of pumpkin spice. Now is the time when you heat up your drinks, not just in temperature, but even in the flavor, in those extra spices that, just give a little something extra, make it a little warmer. And those moments of huddled under some blankets while the fire goes, just trying to warm that cold that goes into your body. I think this poem so beautifully, beautifully captures that. And the reminder that now is the time when we harvest those apples, and we get to turn them into that drink. It also speaks of how we get to take those long-awaited rewards and turn them into special memories. And I think for that, it's just a phenomenal piece that really leaves that memory with us, or perhaps reminds us of our own fond ones. So stunning write, both D.E. Navarro and Fred Sen. So thank you for sharing this with us. And up next, we're going to have Colored Leaves by Writing Stuff. And Pam, could you give this one a read?
I'll be happy to. All right. Colored Leaves by Writing Stuff. And it goes like this. Colored leaves decorate the pumpkin patch, harvest moon, end poem.
Beautifully read, Pam. Thank you so much for that. And Wayne, would you start us off with your thoughts?
Well, this is another one of the haikus that they amaze me how they write these poems. I tried to write them a couple times. I'm not very good at it because they say so much in just three short lines, and they got the five, the four, the five, the seven, the five lines or syllables, something like that. It's just amazing how they do these. It's just and he said so much with the colored leaves, decorate the pumpkin patch, harvest moon. It kind of fits right into the scheme of the way they're written, and just do a good job. I'm not much into them because I write longer poems, but it's a good job with this poem. And she's a wonderful poet. I know her pretty well. She's a wonderful poet.
I swear, Wayne, you know all the best poets. I have to say, I've got to wiggle into your world and just meet some of these people. because as much as I enjoy going through and reading people's works, I have to admit, I don't always get to speak to poets as much as I would like to, you know, just
yeah,
because.
I like to interact.
Yeah, well, and I do too, it's just, and all of that, but, and sometimes, you know, you just don't get to connect with another poet because you just haven't had the opportunity to, but I agree, she really wrote this beautifully, and there's definitely not a single word out of place, but thank you for that stunning comment, Wayne. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Well, this is a beautiful haiku all the way through, and it really, it's difficult to separate the lines, you know, so they all just flow really nicely into each other. But I do like how that he has the middle line of decorate the pumpkin patch, because it reminds us that how good of a decorator Mother Nature is. And so just a wonderful write and very well done.
That was such a beautiful comment, especially the reminder that Mother Nature does do a wonderful job decorating, because there is definitely some scenes I've seen driving through hills and valleys and mountains that I don't think I would have ever been able to create. So stunning comment, Pam. Thank you. And Robbie, what did you think?
Well, it's interesting to hear a haiku, as I don't hear too many of them, and to comment as well. And I think a haiku is prime poetic real estate to exercise what's called, what William Wordsworth called spots of time. It's one of my favorite poetic concepts, and it's the idea of a perfect spot, so to speak, in time. And that's the kind of thing that I enjoy, especially about a topic like nature, especially put in a haiku, because I think those spots of time were kind of, I think he kind of thought of nature as much as anything else in those spots of time. And so I like the exercise, hearing the exercise poetically of capturing a singular moment of time, but especially if it's in nature. And I thought that this did it well.
Absolutely. And I love how you describe that in time, because haikus really do kind of pinpoint a moment. And yet, done so beautifully like this, you can see multiple moments that it can fit to. But again, it takes us to being in that moment, being present. So thank you for that wonderful comment. I think what's so beautiful about this is that there's all these beautiful colors, and each line reminds us of the colors that come with fall. We have the colored leaves, we have the reds and the yellows and the orange and the light green and the brown. We have colored leaves. You know they're not just green. And then the second line, decorating the pumpkin patch. And again, I just imagine the brown of the dirt, perhaps a little bit of green from grass that's still around, those colors of leaves just everywhere, as Pam kind of mentioned, and yet the vibrant oranges. And if it's anything like the pumpkin patch we went to yesterday, it's not just orange. There's the orange pumpkins with some green in it, the red pumpkins with white veins, white pumpkins, green pumpkins. There's so many different colors. And so it doesn't just leave us with a bland color, but a rainbow of fall, finishing off at the end of the day with that harvest moon, that orange, blood red, almost kind of colored moon that hangs in the sky in contrast to all the white stars that twinkle above it. It just shows the way that color permeates time of year. And it paints so beautifully this picture, this idea of a day that you can't help but feel at peace at the end of it and see the beauty that comes with this time. It's just a stunning, stunning light. So thank you, Write and Stuff, for allowing us to share this. And thank you guys for the wonderful comments. Up next, I'm going to have Wayne read Harvest Moon Serenade by Pisces at Dawn.
I'll do the best I can. Let's see what we got here. Okay, so it's called Harvest Moon Serenade by Pisces at Dawn. It goes like this. Lavish in tone harmonies, luxuriant notes in your voice turn into stars and warblers flying across the evening sky, serenade the harvest moon and herald a festive night. In.
It was really beautiful brevity. Thank you so much for that. And Robbie, would you start us off with your thoughts?
I found this one to be particularly lush with both the way it's paired up with the picture and everything that was put into it. I'm a big fan of birds, and it was nice to see that paired up with stars. And just there was a lot of intertwined imagery packed into a small space, you know, like lavishly intoned harmonies, luxurious notes in your voice. And it was all really compacted, but it was all really connected too, because like at the end it's talking about, you know, those voices serenading the harvest moon in a festive night. And so, yeah, overall I really enjoyed the lushness of the of this particular rite.
Oh, you're absolutely right. This does have those beautiful entwining imagery. And even that idea of the harmonies that are mentioned, the way that they complement and weave with each other, it does create this very luxurious kind of a rite to it. So thank you for that, Robbie. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Oh, my goodness. This is such a wonderful brevity. It really does have, I love how there's so much reference like to music, like the notes and the voice, the serenade of the harvest moon and herald a festive night. There's really, to me, such a sense of celebrating the magic of this time of year. So just a wonderful rite and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I love how you even bring out the magic of this time of year, because it is. I mean, they kind of joke that once October hits, it's spooky season. But really, if we look at fall as a whole, autumn as a whole, it really is a magical time that's just kind of full of mystery and joy and festivities and changing. So that was such a beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Wayne, what did you think of this?
I like this a whole lot. She paints nice phrases and paints a lovely picture that she painted. And Harvest Moon does bring out a picture tonight. It's a time to celebrate the bounty that you did work so hard for. And it's a nice, peaceful, loving poem that I like a whole lot. You did a great job with this.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you mentioned how the Harvest Moon, at least historically, was the night that you went out and you harvested the crops, that you went out and had a festivity, that you got to enjoy all the reaping of your hard work. And so I think that was such a stunning comment, even just harkening back to the original idea of the Harvest Moon. This is, to me, such a beautiful piece because it speaks of almost an intimate moment, perhaps almost two lovers that are appreciating each other before they're drawn off and have that time together. And for it to remind us of the beauty of this time, the way in which we get to join together, the way in which we get to celebrate all our hard work, I think that it really just speaks deeply to the beauty of that harvest moon, that beauty of this time that perhaps even our ancestors got to celebrate when they got that last big meal before the winter. So I think this was a beautiful piece. It used perfect imagery. And really reminds us of what this season used to be before everything was available, perhaps in grocery stores. So stunning, stunning rite. And up next, we're going to have Food, Glorious Food by Star BG. And Pam, would you mind giving this a read?
I would be happy to. And, of course, very rarely will I have any other answer than that. And this is Food, Glorious Food by Star BG. And it goes like this. Food is fuel for the grand soul, morsels coat, stomach to quell. Throat expands and want to sing, all my senses start to ring. Fantastic food escorts delight, making one feel oh so right. Giving flavor wings to fly, dreams take off inside blue sky. Fish and steak and fruit I love, melts in mouth to fly like dove. Apples, dates, and old dessert makes my eyes begin to perk. Food be needed every day, cook with it, I call it play. Morsels coat stomach with ease, look, desserts, they're such a tease. Eating gives me such a high, now I'm stuffed and bow goodbye. End poem.
Oh, what a delightful poem and a fantastic read, Pam. Thank you so much for that. And Wayne, would you start us off on this poem with what you thought of it?
I think it's a wonderful poem. Starby G, she does a lot of picture taking in where she lives out on the side of the lake, and I just see a lot of her pictures out there. We talk about her pictures quite a bit. She's another good poet. And she has a beautiful picture up there of the food, but she mentioned the food in such a lovely way that it's kind of romantic the way she talks about food. And I think I gained 2 pounds just listening to it. It's so much food in this poem. So it's a very good job, and I enjoyed the poem, and she does good work too. Great job.
Absolutely. She does really beautifully capture that that feast and the joys of the food that comes with such a feast. Thank you for that. And Robbie, what did you think of this poem?
Well, it reminded me a little bit of when I was at a luau, which was nice. I never thought I'd be at a luau, but for those that don't know, it's like a Hawaiian feast. And it just reminding me of that experience and just the whole experience of having like such a big meal in front of you and taking the time to really taking the time to eat, like, you know, like a whole hour's worth. And it seemed like even like the picture, I mean, even though it's obviously much different food, it was it reminded me of that table spread out before us. So I enjoyed the poem for that, for reminding me of that that really pleasant experience. And I think especially when it's a big meal like it's being shown in the in here, that's definitely what it's like. It's really like a festivity in and of itself.
That is such a stunning comment, especially because the mention of how you kind of get to take that time and really enjoy the food, enjoy the feast. American culture is definitely a little quicker when it comes to food. We don't often sit down and have these long meals. I believe it's in France or Italy that a meal can be anywhere from 2 to 3 hours because they sit and they talk and they commune, and we don't really see eating and meals as that way. And so I love your reminder of even what it was like going to a luau, where it took more time, where there was more effort put into enjoying the meal, because truly that's what a feast is about. So thank you for that sending comment, Robbie. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Oh, I think this is just absolutely just a wonderful light. I love the way she celebrates the fact that food doesn't just taste good and serve a purpose for satisfying, you know, for helping hunger, but that it's also preparing it is a work of art, that enjoying it is something that feeds the soul. You know, I really like those kind of references in this poem. And then, of course, you know, I like that she mentions the fish and the steak and the fruit, but then especially all those desserts that just tease the eye. And so excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I love that comment, because you're right. Feasts aren't just about the food. While the food is there to be pleasing to the eye, ultimately, it's there about the community and the soul and feeding that. And you remind me of the large feasts in the old days the Vikings, there'd always be a large feast before they went into battle or before they departed on a journey, because they wanted to have that last moment of communion, of being together, of camaraderie that comes with sitting and sharing a meal together. So that is such a stunning, stunning comment, Pam. Thank you for it. I think what really strikes me about this is, much like everyone else has said, there is that idea of all the fun things, the way that your eyes devour the table. And it reminds me of how your eyes can be bigger than your stomach, how you'll look at a table and you'll go, oh, I want to try all this stuff. And yet when you sit down and start to eat, you start to realize that, you know, perhaps you don't have quite the stomach for all of it. But yet you sit there and you want to try it all. And so that's when you have to wear your slightly looser pants or unbutton the top button or loosen your belt a notch. There's kind of that joy that comes with a feast. And it reminds me of like Thanksgiving, because that is the feast, that is communion, that is fellowship. And it's the time that family comes together and shares these massive meals. I mean, Christmas, sure, but Thanksgiving is a level of its own. And so this reminds me of that. This reminds me of those moments when you get to enjoy the feast that's before you, knowing that this much food has been prepared because you are going to get to enjoy the family that you have, the comrades that you have. And yet you know that there's going to be that tease of pie even after you've eaten too much, until finally you're just too stuffed to eat anymore. Perhaps you fall asleep on a couch, or perhaps you make your way out. But I think this is just a really beautiful poem that captures all of that, that captures the essence of a feast. So I thought it was really quite delightful. So thank you for that, Star BG, and everyone for your fantastic comments. And up next, we're going to have Crispy or Chopped, Creamy or Popped by LG. And I'm going to have Robbie give this one a read, if you would.
Okay, Crispy or Chopped, Creamy or Popped. The golden kernels peek through sheaves below a sunlit sky of blue, while crispy corn husks shed their leaves and early morning slivers through. A veggie stall sells just-picked ears to fix up crisp in county air, with tasty salads and cold beer, or sides of stew and carrot fare. When spring begins, the fields are wet as frost plays nagging peekaboo. Mid-April planting is top bet for harvest crops tired crew. Sweet crunchy cobs with littered dew can even roast on barbecue.
Beautiful read, Robbie. Thank you so much for that. I think what is so fun about this is, as someone who, I mean, winter is definitely my favorite season, and Christmas is definitely my favorite holiday, but Halloween is a close second. And what I love about this time of year, because I am not a spring person, I am not a summer person, I am a winter person, and if I never had to see the sun again, I would probably be a very happy girl. But what I really love about this is that it talks about almost, or at least it reminds, of the changing in the light. I've gone to many corn mazes. It's part of my family's tradition. As soon as spooky season is here, we find corn mazes and we go to as many of them as we possibly can. And when you're walking through these corn mazes with a little bit of autumn light, it's a whole different world. You still have those green stalks, but they're starting to kind of turn brown, and there's still some corn left on a few of them, and you can see places where people have pulled an ear off and perhaps looked in it, or perhaps it's just fallen to the ground, and kind of the aging of that, or the corn kernels that have dried and fallen onto the dirt as you're walking through these corn mazes. And usually at these places, because it's a corn maze, there's often this fresh popped corn or corn on the cob, buttered corn on the cob, which I'm actually not a huge fan of. Or even the idea when he says with tasty salads and cold beer, it really reminds me almost of Oktoberfest too, where you get to go out and you get to try all these beers and these ales and perhaps you have a side of delicious corn to go with it. And yet all of this, it shows the diversity of corn. And while, yes, corn is there during the scent, at least even if it's later summer, we really get to enjoy it in these later times of the year. The decorative corn that we put up, the stalks that we put around our house for fall, just the way in which it weaves into our life. Because in many ways, it is that gold that infiltrates our life during this time. It's our own little bit of those rays that we capture that the sun seems to reflect through each of its stalks. And so I love this. I love the appreciation of corn, because I'm not sure that there's another vegetable that really falls into fall the way that corn quite does. And so I appreciate the almost intense look into it, because to me it's very much the essence of it. So really stunning, right? And such a fantastic read, Robbie. And Wayne, what did you think of this?
Well, I think she did a wonderful job writing the Sky's photo. This is a photo contest of Sky's. Sky is styling the photo. She's quite the photographer. This poem describes the harvest corn in a detailed view, where she mentioned the way the corn looks before right at harvest, then mentioned the stalks, which is sold. It goes on to talk about the maize that's left out in the field that the people play in after the corn's harvested, and then on to the pleasure of eating corn off the cob. So she covered the whole gambit of the life of a corn, that's what it's picked. So she did a wonderful job with this, and it's a pleasure to listen to it. Good job.
And you're right. Sky Darkholm did do a really fantastic job taking this picture. Just the contrast and the beauty and the makeup of it is really just quite stunning. It's beautiful in and of itself, even though it kind of has that dirty, rugged kind of feel. But I agree. LG really did do an amazing job of kind of painting life into the thought behind it, into that photograph. So stunning comment, Lane. Thank you for that. And Pam, I know you had to pop away for a second, but did you get a chance to read or hear this? Would you like to share a thought?
Oh, absolutely. This is the kind of poem that makes me hungry. I love the idea of grilled corn on the cob with cold beer and tasty salads. And, you know, it just, it's one of those, it's a wonderful rite that reminds us of how great it is to get together with food that's been harvested. And I like how she reminds us of the stands on the side of the road that often sell corn and other vegetables. I know that's really cool. It's an excellent rite and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I love what you said, it does feel hungry, because it does. Because there is all those different aspects of corn, the way that you can enjoy it, and the feast that it can have, the way that it weaves into each of those moments. Stunning, stunning comment, Pam. Thank you. And Robbie, having read it, what did you think of this piece?
Well, to me, it was very much the personification of autumn food and fall time food. And the picture that went with it furthered along that sort of personification. And so, yeah, like you said, it's corn on the cob. And, you know, mentions this, I like how it talks about how it can even be roasted on barbecue, so he's looking at all the ways that can be prepared, and, yeah, all the food here to me reminds me of autumn time, and so I enjoyed it for that, and I think that right now I'll be just taking off. I just saw how much minutes I have up on my cell phone, and I'm on my cell, I'm on my home phone, so I have to watch the minutes a little more judiciously on my cell phone. And I don't know if it was my phone making noise or not, but I apologize if it was. I was a little puzzled by that, because I've just been standing still here, I haven't been doing stuff. So, but hopefully it hasn't been picking up some atmospheric static, because we had a storm here. Well, we've had storms pretty much all day here, so I don't know if it was picking up some static or something, so.
That probably powerful the phone.
Well, I really, really appreciate you being here for as long as you could, for as long as you were here, for offering your voice and your comments. Even if the atmospheric static had its own words to say too, it was absolutely a delight to have you. So don't stay a stranger. Come hang out with us again, okay?
You bet.
All right. Have a good night, Robbie. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
All right. And up next, we're going to have Garden Delight, Springtime with Persephone. And Pam, would you give this one a read for us?
Absolutely. Springtime with Persephone by Garden Delight. And it goes like this. Persephone has risen once more from the underworld for springtime. Her eyes are lively and animated. Her full smile creates warmth within hearts. Joyfully she flies all about, touching, blessing, gracing trees, flowers, bushes, grain, anything that grows from the ground. She communicates with them all, has a rapport unrivaled in nature, with influence over the air and water. She grants flowers requests to spread far afield. Trees have asked to feel the wind in their hair. A brook desires to meander closer to grazing deer. A red-tailed hawk hopes for even keener vision. Wheat and barley want to intermingle and chat. Woe to those who would deceive Persephone's powers to give life, for Hades, her spouse, will avenge her. She will appear beside him and is feared of her own accord. Celebrate joyfully. Persephone has blessed this land. End poem.
Oh, what a beautiful read, Pam. And what a stunning write by Garden Delight. I love not just the idea of the harvest, the way that that she brings life, that she brings joy, that she reinvigorates the world. But even the harvest, the way that the world kind of dies as she reenters Hades, and that's when that harvest gets to take place. That's when people get to enjoy all this life that she, because often we forget that a lot of plants, after they bloom, they die, at least for a short bit, that stock may disappear, and they need something new has to come of it. And so there is that death, but with it also comes that harvest, comes those fruits and those grains and the vegetables that we have long thought. And I appreciate that they even mentioned Hades in this, because, and the way in which it was done was so beautifully done, because so often Hades is kind of this, you know, he's the god of death, and so he's something to be feared and avoided. But in this sense, he's using his power, if you will, to protect and stand up for his love. And who doesn't want a greater love than that, than for someone who will go to battle for you? And yet there's still that reminder that she's not just delicate. She brings life as much as the loss of her presence takes it away. And so in that way, we can also see that beauty and compatibility with Hades as they contrast each other's powers. And so I love this, that gentle reminder of not just Persephone, how she blesses the land, but even how her leaving, returning to her love's side, how all of that into this cycle of life and death and a celebration of what you have while you have it, because it is a reminder too that it is all finite. So stunning, stunning, right? Just absolutely gorgeous. And Wayne, what did you think of this?
Well, I think it's a wonderful poem about the goddess Persephone. There's so much action in this little poem here, with the seasons, the animals, and the different kind of plants. Or harvest, and I don't say anything bad because I don't want her husband to come after me. I don't know what to do with Hades right now. So it's a lovely poem with a great storyline, and I enjoyed it all the way through, and a great read there, Pam. Enjoyed it.
What a fun comment, though, too, Wayne, because you're right. Nobody, I don't think anybody would want to mess with Hades, but you're right. It does create a really beautiful storyline that just kind of brings us along on the path and the joy of it. Beautifully said. And Pam, having read it, what did you think?
I think this is just absolutely a wonderful poem. I love how she uses that she writes about Persephone and Hades, and that she writes about, you know, the joy of springtime and the communication that Persephone has with nature. You know, this just, flows really nicely. I think, honestly, when it comes to imagery and poetry that has a gentle feel to it, Garden Delights is probably one of my favorites. I like especially some of her use of words like meander and rapport. And I like how that she reminds us that Persephone will appear by Hades' side, and she is to be feared of her own accord, that she has her own power, and it is not to be trifled with, but it is to be truly appreciated. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, what a wonderful comment. And you're right. I do agree that there's this real beauty in the reminder that she's not just someone that you can mess with, but just because she brings life, she still is powerful and should not be crossed. So I love that idea of someone who has that gentleness and that grace, and yet perhaps someone that you should still watch your tongue around. This next one is called Emoji Q3 by Orange. And I'm going to give this one a read. I am going to put a disclaimer out for anyone who might not appreciate some adult jokes or hinting, but I thought it was too fun not to include. So this is Emoji Q3. July's harvest, my ill-fated tweet about eggplant. End poem. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
Oh, that was funny. Oh, my gosh. It just goes to show you don't need a lot of lines get humor in there. And the fact that she did it with the eggplant emoji, I thought was just really awesome. It reminds me of, I was watching one of the Doctor Who's being interviewed, and he was taking a class on communication, like how to not sexually harass people in the workplace, and at the end of it, it said, and remember, an eggplant isn't just an eggplant. And in the interview, he admitted that at the time he did not realize what an eggplant represented, which absolutely cracked me up. But you know,
that sounds like David Tennant.
And you know what? Honest to goodness, I get the eggplant thing, I get the peach thing, but there are some times when it comes to online communication, especially uses of emojis, that I'm just like, it's too much. It's just way too much. But this was great fun.
Oh, no, and you're right, it is. It is such a fun poem. And I would agree, there's definitely like, I mean, I grew up in an era where cell phones weren't really available until I was in high school. And we didn't really start using emojis until I think I was out of college when emojis started becoming like really the it thing. And so I would agree, like there is some times where I'm like, where did all these emojis come from? And how do people use them all? Because there are the sexual connotation ones. There's the ones that just mean all sorts of weird stuff. Apparently there's something to do with a chair now. It's just, we're speaking more in hieroglyphics than we are in words now, but I love that because, I mean, just the fun. I think you are referencing an interview with David Tennant because there are all these hints and things that people don't realize until it becomes common knowledge or kind of the jokes that come with it. So the military has a, and I don't think it was exclusively to the military, but the military has a whole thing. Their sexual harassment and sexual assault and sensitivity training involved making tea. And so that's kind of the way that they talk about it, about consent as making tea. You know, you can start to make tea and someone can decide that they don't want to. And, you know, you should not put your tea bag in someone unless they're absolutely sure. And all of that kind of stuff. And so, and yet, you know, I think that there are some people who would know that reference and others that wouldn't. And so you're right. There can be those a little too much in this day and age. And yet this one too has that kind of fun playfulness. So stunning comment, Pam. Thank you so much. And Wayne, what did you think of this?
Well, I'm one of the guys that I don't know. I didn't really understand the meaning of the hidden meaning of it. She's talking about the pictures of eggplants until Pam said something about it. And I said, oh, no, I'm not even on the right subject. But I said it's a lovely poem with a wonderful writing style by an apology about mentioning eggplants. The eggplants are not my favorite either. I cook and eat them about twice a year, and they have to be treated with care and breaded properly. So then I said, oh, no, we're talking about a hidden meaning here. So I got off on the wrong subject off the bat. So it's a humorous what she said and kind of dumb what I said. So... I didn't know what the hidden meaning was. That's weird. But yeah, he caught me off guard. It's kind of funny now. Yeah, I'm my age. We didn't have emojis when I was growing up. I used emojis when I got on this site here. It's the first time I ever used them. So I never had to use emojis at all. So it's kind of shocking when I heard that. So anyway, I'm good.
I'm pretty sure you just totally made my night, Wayne. Oh no, I think Wayne accidentally dropped. He just totally made my night. I love that idea that, you know, and it goes to show, you know, people don't always know everything that, oh, Wayne is back. I'm going to bring Wayne back on. But people don't always know the cultural significance of stuff. I mean, like, maybe because like their life just hasn't made them be involved in it, or, you know, it's just not something they partake in, you know? And so I love that because... I can only imagine calling on Wayne to give the first comment, and he'd be like, I too don't like eating eggplants. And it would have been like, oh, no.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. I tried to go mute.
But
He's going to mute. I'm so embarrassed.
No, but I do. I love your honesty and even the joy that it brings to the show. It goes to show, again, that even art, using emojis, even poetry using emojis. Different people are going to get different things from it just because we each approach it differently. And so even something so simple as this, even playful as this, speaking of a harvest of eggplants, you know, it's just delightful. That totally made my night. And I'm so glad that we read this poem and we got to have this conversation because that was so much fun.
Wow.
I thought this was, I mean, it's fun, it's clever, and it's simple, but it also leaves the mystery of like, well, what did you tweet about? And it makes us just kind of want to delve deeper and get to know them better. But I love the playfulness. I love, like Pam was saying, you know, there's the idea of the eggplant and there's the idea of the peach. And we have all these different references and ideas that go along with these different images and how they invoke them. But especially in this day and age where you're a typo away from sacrilege, so to speak, it's just kind of fun for someone to play with perhaps their own mishap. And it reminds me, so I actually hate texting because, and my husband has said that I need to get like, I guess they're called like source switches or something because I type very quickly. And so a lot of times I'll have typos when I type things out if I don't stop to like actually read them over to make sure that I didn't hit numbers wrong or letters wrong or something like that. And so he wants to get me like a special keyboard that's specifically for fast typers. But I hate texting just as much because it's kind of the same thing. You know, our screens are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. You don't have to press seven, you know, seven, four times to get an S anymore or whatever. You don't have to do that. And so now you're kind of stuck trying to hit a keyboard that's, you know, not smaller than your thumb. And I don't have like the world's biggest hands, but I still struggle. And so this reminds me that I actually lost a friend over a text typo because his wife at the time was, she just got really pissed off. They were very politically charged. And I don't tend to get into politics, but I'm a tax expert. And so, and, you know, I have a license. I practice before the IRS and everything. And I had to, they kept going on about like different politicians' tax plans and how they were the greatest. And it's like the only political thing that I'll really get involved because That's what I do all day, every single day. That's what I do. I think so I get involved in these tax things, and I was telling him, like, what your politician is doing doesn't really work, and this is why, and explaining it to them and reminding them that politicians, at least in America, like to give off the idea that they're experts in everything, and they really aren't. There's a lot of tax loopholes that come about because they don't really know what they're doing, but they're making laws on these things that they don't know what they're doing. And so I got really tired of arguing with them. And so in the middle of this, I just said, I wish you the best of luck to you both. But I, instead of hitting the O in both, I hit an I, because, you know, on the keyboard, the I and the O are right next to each other, and it's text and it's a tiny keyboard. And she took it as best of luck to you, bitch. And I lost a friend because of that. You know, I mean, like, she got pissed off at me. She went to him. He went off on me. And I was like, whoa, like, I'm not one to typically do that to people. You guys have known me long enough to do this. But because of that, because of technology, because someone was heated in a moment and they were already emotionally charged, they read it differently. And so I love this poem and comments like Tam and comments like Lane, because it reminds us that even in this world of technology, even in this world that says that we're communicating better, that we are with each other more connected, that there's still so many more opportunities for misunderstanding because the wrong emoji was used, the wrong letter was hit, the wrong, you know, reaction was done on Facebook or whatever. And suddenly we're kind of in this moment where we have these miscommunications and sometimes they take away. So I'm glad that you were honest, Wayne, about your misinterpretation of this. And I love Pam and the honesty of, you know, sometimes there's a little too much, but I also love this piece because of its playfulness, because of the way it throws in the face how technology really doesn't always add to our life, but also leaves that question of, like, well, what did you tweet about? Like, share the details. I need the tea. I still don't know what that means. I just know how to use it. So if anybody's wondering what the tea is, I have no idea, but it's there, and apparently it's juicy. So things we don't know about technology and still use. I love it. And thank you, Oren.
Tea represents tea bagging.
Just
a thought. I don't know. That's my guess.
No, but I like it. I think of a tea bag, and that's what I thought of too, is like the idea of, like, you know, a secret in like a little satchel and you put it in some hot water and it seeps out. Like, I don't know where it comes from, but I like the idea of a tea bag. I think Wayne was thinking of a different kind of tea bag.
Yeah, I know what the connotation is for a tea bag.
I appreciate that. First, Pam
Maybe
had the dirty one,
on
and Wayne
the
had the innocent
poem.
Interpretation.
Okay. And if it's the other way around, man, I'm blushing.
Oh, my gosh. This is, who knew that a little haiku was going to cause that much dialogue? I love it. Oh, all right. Well, up next, we have The Harvest by Budo. And, Wayne, would you give this one a read?
I'll do my best. This is called The Harvest. It goes like this. It's still the orange scent of fall, flowering glow of tree-top leaves, of sweet neon and willow arms, bare naked to gray whirlwinds. She sings the dire dirge of weeping as floral impings to sleeping, her robin thrills to keeping, as wintry draws the deeping, a gentle reverent sigh of seems to whisper to all who listen sigh, the cacker of ritual callings, the eyes wide shut in cluster grove to rest a season's dream to spring. Terrible read.
Beautifully read, Wayne. Thank you so much. No, you did absolutely great. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts on this piece?
I really like this. Budo always has such beautiful poetry. I like how this seems to be about the personification of autumn. I like that he combines the sweet and neon together. Flower and glow of treetop leaves, a sweet neon, and willow arms. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought to put those two words together, but it just works so well to describe the colors of the leaves. And I also like that he puts in here a gentle, reverent sigh. Just absolutely a beautiful rite that you know shows the imagery that brings nature to life. So excellent rite and very well done.
Oh, that was such a beautiful comment, Pam, because you're right. There really is a personification of autumn in this. There is that beautiful appreciation for the way that life kind of just happens and even the way in which it fades. And I like that there's this idea of it being a ritual, that there is a means and a method, and we get to see the cause and effect of this time of year. And even that picture, I think it's just beautiful. I think it beautifully surmises this piece in that kind of breathing of appreciation as life is slowly fading away, kind of that final farewell before that long sleep. So thank you so much for that stunning comment, Pam. And what a stunning write by Budo. And Wayne, having read it, what did you think?
Well, I think it's a wonderful poem. And I feel like I butchered Budo's poem. Me and Budo's good buddies. We have talked to him today, so maybe it won't beat me up too bad. But he did a great job of this. And then my dyslexia from reading it, it's got up to my dyslexia coming to effect there. I couldn't see the words scrambled out right the right way. And so I was going, what in the world is he saying? So it was did a bad job reading it, but it's a good poem, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. This is my 8th show in 3 days, by the way, so I've been reading a lot of poems. So I'm about to met my limit. Yes, so my 8th show in 3 days.
Well, I think that you are doing an amazing job, and I appreciate even the honesty of, like, your dyslexia, because it's hard for some people to, and I mean, like, let's be honest, these shows are kind of exposing. You go on air, anybody can listen to you. It distinctly reminds me, a few months back, we did a fun little night of, what was it, pop trivia. And I kept saying, like, Socrates, and it's Socrates, and I know it's Socrates, but my head was just not in it. And right. So Laurent was listening, and finally he was like, Victoria, Socrates, and I was like, oh, but the whole time I'm like, Socrates. So now that's my thing. He's just going to have to be Socrates from now on. But I appreciate even the vulnerability, because these shows aren't always easy. I actually have performance anxiety, and now I'm fairly comfortable with the shows, but I remember even now there'll be like a poem that's really deep to my soul, and so I'll get nervous to read it, or even like when I first started calling in, I remember shaking out of fear and anxiety to call in. But it's a beautiful thing to be honest, because there are people who are listening who'd like to call in, and maybe they're not comfortable with it yet, and that's okay. And so we don't have any SoundClouds tonight, but as a gentle reminder, if someone is interested in having their voice heard on the show, even if they're not comfortable calling in, we do always love to get a SoundCloud, because then we do get to hear your work in your voice without you having to necessarily be ready to come on and read it live, because that is a whole nother level of stuff. So if anybody has SoundClouds that they would ever like to contribute, we also love to have those, as much as we also love to hear you call in and give us your voice. So thank you.
Go ahead. If I read a poem two or three times, I can get the flow down right, and I can get the rhythm going pretty good. But, the first time I read a poem for the first time, it's hit or miss. And that's just the way it is. My eyes getting too focused on the words. So I try to go as slow as I can, but it's a trip for me to read a poem the first time. I've never seen it. So I do it to just try to get to be a better person.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a really beautiful thing to say, because it just goes to show that not all of us, I don't think any of us can go on and read every single poem perfectly. Like, we each are going to stumble on our own weird things. So thank you. Thank you for that, Wayne. And thank you, Budo, for what an amazing, amazing poem that you provided us tonight. All right. And up next, we were going to have a SoundCloud for this one, but it was not able to be loaded in time. This is going to be Gerald E. Green, and I'll give this one a read. This is called Community Center Poetry Reading. The autumn day was perfect for a celebration. People gathered at the old brick building, local folks who knew each other, those who lived there as a child. This was the west side of town, where we white people haven't lived for hundreds of years, but a place full of memories for all but me in attendance. This property, now a community center, brought people together, like a church, without any reference to an angry God. Ceremony would be African, would recognize the value of the harvest and honor those who gave us our inheritance of virtue and integrity. It was there I saw her, a tall and dignified looking woman with gray hair and African dress, someone I must meet. I felt drawn by invisible forces, could not resist the pull to know her, a special gift to be enjoyed with conversation and connection. We talked until a rule seemed broken, then she left and joined the other women, her scarf gently dangling behind, inviting my eyes to follow. As a retired professor of African history, she understood what I was there to learn, and my poetic speech seemed less important on that autumn afternoon among new friends. End poem. I'm sitting here with goosebumps. I think that was just a beautiful, beautiful write by Gerald E. Green. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. I agree. This is beautiful. And I like how he takes us into this moment, into this building, this community center where people gather together to learn from one another. And I like where he mentions where he says, it was there I saw her, tall and dignified looking woman with gray hair and African dress, someone I must meet. And then I also liked, we talked until a rule seemed broken. Then she left and joined the other women, her scarf gently dangling behind, inviting my eyes to follow. As a retired professor of African history, she understood that I was there to learn. You know, I think it's so important to understand that we can learn from each other. And, you know, I like how it also reminds us that people from different cultures and different areas have various ways of communicating, you know, and so really just a wonderful, thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
That was such a beautiful comment, Pam. And I think what I really appreciate about it is that the emphasis that you put on even the way in which the rules seemed broken and he continued to follow her with his gaze afterwards, there's almost a kind of intimacy there, but it's a reminder that this is just between friends. This isn't some kind of secretive love affair. It's just that in-depth desire to know someone, to know their story, and for him to even bring it in as trying to understand a background in which he did not grow up in, but was interested in, it shows that willingness to go out and understand others who may not have the same worldview or experiences that we might have. And I think that's how you truly create those communities, is learning to meet people on their level, learning to understand what shapes them and how they become the people that they became. And so I love the reverence and respect that he puts into this piece. With that in mind, this isn't about him flaunting his poetic abilities. This was about him going to a place that could have very easily made him uncomfortable and still seeking community, still seeking to understand, still seeking to know deeper and find that communion that doesn't come necessarily with church, but within connecting with your fellow human being. And that in many ways is a harvest in and of itself, especially when you're communing with a group of people who for so long were used in ways that no one ever should, that were dehumanized, and how that history can still play out in ways today that we don't always expect. So thank you for that beautiful comment, Pam. And thank you, Gerald, for this amazing piece of work. And Wayne, what did you think of it?
Well, I wrote my comment directly to Gerald because he's always, I hear him all the time on his poems. I always tell him what kind of his voice is when he reads. I always tell him he'd be a great teacher. And I never knew he was a teacher, a professor, because I'm always kidding around about his voice being so clear and perfect as he reads. But it's a very good job, and I said, I could not listen to the SoundCloud, but I could hear your voice reading this in your own style. And you, when you read, to honor those who gave us our inheritance of virtue and integrity, there was a great line there, and there's a lovely poem you wrote here, and he said, a professor of American history, of African history. I knew he was a teacher of some kind, but he never told me what kind of teacher he was, because his poems are always kind of instructive-like, and his voice is so clear and perfect, it's a I'm satisfied to know what kind of teacher your professor is, because I've always assumed he was a professor of some kind. And we talked quite a bit, but he never told me what kind of professor he was. Great job with this poem. I enjoyed it. And it's kind of opened my eyes up a little bit, too. So I loved it.
I love that. I love that you've been teasing him about being a teacher, and all along he was a teacher. And it just goes to show that even no matter how deeply we connect with people, there's always more that we can learn from them, always more that we can learn about those that we call friend and lover and family. Is that learning and growing experience that we get to have the opportunity as we connect with others. So thank you for that stunning comment, Wayne. I appreciate you so much.
Yeah, I told him several times that if I started my communication company, I would have him out teaching, to show and teach the customers how to use their phones, because he instructs in such a pure, clear voice that it's perfect the way he talks. And so I always kid him about it. I'll tell him about hiring. So he's a nice guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And he was so sweet. He had recorded an audio for the show tonight, but I got to it too late. So that was my fault. But I am so thankful that he still let us share his work. So if anybody does get the opportunity, definitely check out that audio and check out his work. So up next, we're going to have another piece by our friend Wayne here. This is called Harvest. And Wayne, could you read this when you're ready? Did the mute monster get you, Wayne?
Yes, my headset quit working. It's probably, I think the battery probably died on it. So I'm going to read this over the headset.
Oh, no.
Over the speakerphone, I mean. Yeah, just died on me a while ago. But what this poem I wrote, this is one of my favorite poems, is for a contest. And the contest had the first word of every line was given to us. And then we had to put six words after the word. And when I wrote this, I didn't realize what I was writing. When I got through it, I liked it so much. It's one of my favorite poems. It's called Harvest. And it goes like this. Rapture was so gentle, tapping the door, fresh feet scampering across the kitchen floor, broken eggs sizzling, breakfast in the air, timely was served, all wanted to share. Corpse of men arrived at harvest field, rippled through crops, checking on yield. Heat wave ended with a cool autumn rain, bodies overworked, legs had been strained. Crest of moon means daily work ends, taste of harvest, dinner meal preparation begins. Torn shirts, muddy shoes, dying, wearing smiles, void of all complaints after all the miles. Smell of love covered our nightly feast, crimson skies glowing, fading back toward east. Roots established over 100 years ago, mold and cold in a month to show. Song sung quietly, soon time for bed, fight for life, the Bible is read. Mindless men now resting in their sleep, touch from God, let their spirits keep. In.
That was such a phenomenal read and write, Wayne. And I'm so glad that you shared this with us, because it really does speak to the hard days spent out in the field, the hard work that not too long ago people were going through, and even some people still to this day who it's that harvest time. Daylight savings time was all created for the farmers, and this really reminds us of that. It reminds us of the work that they did so that people could have food on their table. It meant
back
the kids
in the, back in the day,
getting up before school. Go ahead.
Back in the day, all the farmers would get together and they'd harvest one field after another, and they'd all work together, and they'd go one place and they'd spend several nights there harvesting, and they'd all eat together. Then they'd go to the next farm and they'd harvest it. They all work together to get the harvest in. And that's what the, kind of what the poem about, where they all work together and they all go out together and harvest and they all come back and eat and then they all sleep around together too, getting ready for the next day. So it's a enjoyed writing this poem.
No, and I think you did such a phenomenal job being true to the essence of that time and what that work looked like. So I think you really just did a marvelous job. And Pam, would you like to share some thoughts?
Absolutely. I can definitely see why this won 2 golds. It's truly worth it. It not only describes that kind of lifestyle that back then of working together, eating together, worshiping together, playing together, you know, that whole community feel to it. It has wonderful rhyme and flow. It has just really nice imagery. I especially like crest of moon means daily work ends, taste of harvest, dinner meals, preparation begins, torn shirts, muddy shoes, dying wearing smiles. I like how that you remind us that these men all came home, you know, with their and enjoyed their food with a smile, but they were covered with the dirt of the earth because, you know, they have a connection to the earth. They had a connection to each other. They had a connection to their families. And I thought the way you wrapped it up with that end stanza was just really nice, especially where you say, song sung quietly, spend time for bed, fight for life, the Bible is read. There's that real idea of family time being centered and focused around prayer time, around God, and just really touching and very well done.
Beautifully said, Pam. And I agree. He really has captured that community that came with that time period, that lifestyle, and the way in which it weaves together, not just in the workday, but in all aspects of their life. So stunning comment, and what an amazing write by Wayne. Thank you for that. Up next, we have a piece by Pam. And Pam, you can go ahead and give this a read when you're ready.
All right. Well, just so you know, when I wrote this a couple years ago, I practiced the French that I put in the poem. And so at this point, I did not have a chance to practice, so it will probably be a little off, just so you know. And this is La Première et les petits et nous. Première in crisp autumn air and gilded sun, displaying yourself as a work of art for all the senses. Passing no judgment, but to all who approach, wave and declare, prendrai de moi, my shade is for your comfort. Mes enfants are for your nourishment. Petite pomme, growing where other fruits become naysayers, most delicious when first plucked, teeth sinking into sweet-tempered flesh, letting warm juices flow down an eager throat. Gathered up, carried home in bundles by young and old alike, promised possibilities in even the most modest of kitchens, bubbling in a baptism of cinnamon and brown sugar, enticing aromas, purging the nostrils and whispering psalms to the heart, grand mirror with feeble hands, gentle and firm, though you often command like a dictator of the front porch, immeasurably you love. Le Pemere trusts you, knowing with every cut and falling peel, you are planning to send forth your flock door to door to teach Le Petit Anu. Loving thy neighbor begins with friendly greetings of fresh baked goods and apple butter. End poem.
Oh, my gosh. So you don't know this about me. I never shared this on any show before, but Grandpa, my mom's father, Grandpa, was a logger. And his prize, the thing on his property as I grew up was a prized apple tree. And every fall he would go out and he would pick his apple tree and he would make homemade applesauce and apple butter and apple cider. And if you weren't getting deer jerky, you were getting apple something from my grandpa. And so this actually almost makes me emotional because while I am nowhere near French, I'm a lot of things. I'm not French. While I'm nowhere near French, there is such a beauty in this, all because of an apple tree. That idea that this tree has grown and it has flourished and is now providing its children with little apples for others to feast upon, to make apple butter, and the smell and the aroma of all the things that can be created with apples. And I think of apple crisp and apple pie and apple butter and apple sauce and apple cider and mulled cider. I think of all these beautiful things that all come from this one tree who so readily gives its fruit to those who pass by to nourish, and how community is created and was created so long ago by those, not just baked goods, but those canned goods, because that's what lasted the winter when you didn't have a refrigerator or a freezer, you know, before the times that allowed us to have these luxuries. They had to have things that would last, and so you would can apple butter and applesauce, and you would can your fruits and your vegetables best that you could when that technology came along. And before then, you just dealt with the soil. You dealt with trying to freeze things in an icebox, and or in the snow. And so I love this. There's just
I don't hear Victoria.
I'm guessing
she needs to adjust her headphone or something, or hang up and call back. And while we wait for that, do you want to go ahead and start commenting?
Yeah, I did a comment just you here anyway, because it kind of hooked what I said. I said, that's French. I feel like I should grab your arm and kiss it like the Adams Family guy does every time his wife mentions French. You know, so this is a lovely poem with lots of beautiful scenery and projects a lot of love for the family and the time of year when apple harvest begins. I love this poem, and with that, I'm saying good night, and I'm going to hit the bed. And I love this night. It's a great show tonight. I had a great time, but I about burned myself out.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Wade, and thank you for the wonderful comment.
I'm back. I'm back. I was so proud of my phone. I got a new phone last week, and I was like, oh, my God, it's working. I'm not dropping. And then what did it do 30 minutes before the end of the show? It dropped me.
Of course.
Gosh, I was so proud of it. I was so excited. And as you were reading your poem and I recognized what time it was, I was like, oh, my gosh, this worked. This fixed my problem. No more doppelgangers of Victoria. But it said, nope, best laid plans.
I hear you. I didn't charge my headset for 2 days either, and it died on me. I'm going to let y'all go tonight. I had a great time and enjoyed the show a whole lot, but I'm going to hit the
side. Right. Good night, Wayne.
Take care.
Have a great night, Wayne. But, yeah, just to finish up, I love this piece because it does encompass all the beauty of an apple tree. And if I might, in many ways, it can even remind us of the giving tree from childhood that so readily gives us the shade and the fruit and the wood off its back because we merely ask and appreciate what it provides us. So I think it is a stunning right, Pam.
Well, thank you so much. Did you hear Wayne's comment?
I didn't at all.
Okay, well, he wrote it down on my poem too. I won't read the whole thing, but the beginning cracks me up. Well, actually, I'll read the whole thing because it's fairly short and we have time. He says, that's French. I feel like I should grab your arm and kiss it like the Addams Family guy does whenever his wife says French.
Gomez, yes.
Yep. And then he says, this is a lovely poem with a lot of beautiful scenery and projects, a lot of love for the family and the time of year when the apple harvest happens. Lovely poem. And with that, I am saying goodnight, ladies. I loved this show.
Oh, that makes my heart so happy. He is such a joy to have on the shows. And I agree. What I love about these shows is that, again, it gives us that opportunity for community. It gives us the opportunity to kind of enjoy each other in our company. And sometimes on these slower shows, it's also nice because we get to have that conversation and the goofiness that we might not always get to have. Pam, for being here and hanging out with me.
Oh,
with the unfortunate news that there was only one poem left. So, and it's mine. And it was
well,
always supposed to be in case we ran out. So I will give my poem a read. You don't have to comment on it if you don't want to. But this is called Harvest.
Of course I'm going to comment on it.
I appreciate you. Harvest by Victoria Frost. Sunshine came, and on our perch the frost melted, warming the late-night chill of the moon. Green had faded from our ranks, replaced with gold, orange, and some brown, waiting till we fall to the harvest of the rake. End poem. What'd you think, Sam?
Well, absolutely a wonderful read. You know, I think one of the most important things to know when reading a mega brevity is to slow your voice down, not to the point where people think you're talking in a condescending slow tone, like they won't understand anything, but enough to where they can linger over the words and appreciate them. And I think you found that balance in your read really nicely. I like how you wrote this in two couplets and a single line. I did not realize you'd been on Old Poetry for a couple of years or more. Wonderful lines all the way through, but I really like warming the late night chill of the moon. Green had faded from our ranks, replaced with gold, orange, and some brown. The whole thing is great, but what I like is that you, at the very last line, where you say harvest of the rake, that you remind us that autumn is absolutely beautiful and it's filled with color, but it is also a time where people, especially people who have trees in their yards, have to work extremely hard. I'll tell you one of my mom's favorite stories about me when I was a little kid, and I don't remember this, but it's a story she told me, and the poem made me think of it, when I was about 3 years old, I helped my dad rake up our big yard in Cleveland, Ohio, and in a suburb of Cleveland, and we got them all raked up into a pile. And she jumped into the pile because my mom was a very playful person when she wasn't going through depression. And a very playful person. She jumped in the pile, sent the leaves flying all over the place. And I put my hands on my hips and I said, "Mother, you just destroyed all our work." And she used to love telling that story. And then she would crack up laughing.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So, you know, at a very young age, I became that person who told everybody what exactly was supposed to be done and how it was supposed to be done.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much.
And I think this is a wonderful right.
Well, thank you, Pam. Yeah, I think I've actually been on All Poetry for about 3 years now, but I've teased that I wasn't really present on All Poetry until I wrote The Quill, I think is what it was. And that was actually the first poem that was featured on Lou Yu's show.
Okay.
And so from there, yeah. And so I had been posting poems like maybe once every few months or so, just kind of like whenever, but I didn't really get active into All Poetry until about 2 years ago. And I started tinkering around with the idea, or I guess really it was a little over a year ago that I really got active. But I actually met Dexter first in Late Night Poets, and he's the one who you guys can all blame Dexter for now having to deal with me two nights a week. Because he's the one who was like, "You should do this stuff and you should call into the radio." And now I'm here,
oh,
and you're
cool.
All stuck with me forever. So it was Dexter who got me involved in calling into the shows, but it was my first poem that really was featured was The Quill. So, yeah, but I've been
dinking really
around
cool.
on the site. Yeah,
that
so just
cool.
hiding in the
I
background.
Like
it goes to show that it's never too late to get involved in stuff. Whether you are on All Poetry or you're not, it is never too late to get involved. It is never too late to meet new people and create some amazing friends, because I know that I consider you and Phil some of my closest friends. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing with me is I thought I was going to be one of those in the background people. Honestly, I didn't even think I would last on All Poetry. I thought I would get bored with it. But what ended up happening is the first poem I put into a contest, which was the new members contest for that month, won gold. And
no.
And then, so I just kept on writing, and then Late Night Poets was one of the first groups I joined. 2 months after I joined, the show started. About 3 months or so after the show started, I became the host of the humor show every other week. And then it just kind of has been one of those things where as you probably have figured out, I'm not a background person.
You're just the Kevin of Late Night Poets. You're everywhere.
When I first joined, I would have told you, yeah, I'm just going to be hiding here in the background for like a year, and then I'll disappear.
Well, you can blame Dexter, because I thought I was going to disappear, and he was like, no, you should call and do the show. So I did, and now I'm here all the time.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And I blame
speaking.
Gene.
Oh, go ahead. You blame Gene.
I said, I do. I blame Gene. So that's the person who keeps me around. Well, actually, there's a lot of people that keep me around. I mean, you know,
I was
going
to say, if you tried to
people.
Disappear from me now, I would hunt you down, and you know I can. So I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's what Jean says. She says, I know where you live.
I love it. Oh. Well, speaking of radio shows, what have you got going on this week, Pam?
Oh, my goodness gracious. So much awesome stuff. First of all, on Rex's After Midnight show, the contest is Phil, but the show is Bukowski, poetry inspired by Bukowski quotes. Then Twisted Tuesdays, I have that contest open, and that is song prompts from Rodgers and Hammerstein. Then, of course, Me, You, and Rex on Into the Darkness on Friday will be the last words of serial killers. For Rex's next Rhythm and Rhyme show, he is featuring a band, some English band, and I thought I had it marked. I do, The Delays. So he's featuring music from a band called The Delays. I'm filling in for Neutron this week. Well, you know, I'm going to be there with Bobby. Bobby is hosting the After Midnight show on Wednesday. The Late Night with the Midnight Bomber. And I'll be there with her. But Neutron is running the contest, and I believe they do need some rights. So the contest prompt is a quote that says, health isn't appreciated until sickness arrives. If you get a chance, check that out. And, of course, check out all the contests and the topic boards that our hosts and hostesses put up in Late Night Poets. Because, you know, there's always something to suit anybody's taste and something to inspire.
Absolutely. And what a great reminder to always check out that topic board. But, man, are you busy those next week? Which is good. That's
yes,
a good thing.
Well, me and you both.
Yes. Well, and this week I've got me and Master M are going to have the Black Lace Diaries this coming Wednesday. That topic is going to be a kink in the clothing. So it's that idea of perhaps not taking all your clothes off. Maybe one lover doesn't take their clothes off. Maybe there's a little bit of fun as you take the clothes off. So just kind of that clothes play. Be sure to check that out. We do have room for more rights. We've only got about 9 right now. So definitely looking for more rights on that. And then next week, Wednesday, we do have Strange Magic After Midnight. And we are, since it is spooky season, that contest is called Leatherbound. And it's actually looking at the books that are bound in human skin. There's less than 20 of them actually in existence. They may have just found the 19th one at Harvard, but there's less than 20 that have actually been tested and proven to be human. And so that's kind of a fun thought because one, it's spooky. And two, in many ways, we as poets are much like a human bound book. And so definitely check that contest out. That's going to be going for about the next week and a half, but always looking for some rights for that. And then, of course, hanging out with you for Seriality and probably just going to check up on other shows and Hearts of L&P next week. It's going to be a blast.
Very cool. And I like the way that book binding one can be used metaphorically as well. So that's really cool. Oh, and if considering, like, if you consider big baggy cotton t-shirts as a kink, then I'm there.
I mean, they could be. They could be. So,
I'm going to make them into one.
Do it. I've always said that there's a kink for everything. Just like there's probably been a porno made for everything. There's a kink for everything.
All about comfort. That's me. I'm like, I just want to be comfortable.
I think, honestly, that it. I actually just bought, because I love Tim Burton, Walmart has these, like, super, super soft sweater pajamas, but they're, like, definitely intended to be oversized sweaters, and they come with socks. So you don't wear pants, but you wear the oversized sweater with the socks, and I've gotten two of them. And I'm like, definitely need to go back for a third, because those things are so comfy. It is so comfy. So... But that is all I have for the night. We are 8 minutes to the end of the show, so I will just early farewell. Thank you, Pam, for calling in to hang out with me, Robbie and Wayne. I appreciate you guys so, so much. And thank you to all the poets that hung out with us on the board and allowed us to share your work. Truly, you are what makes these shows possible. So until next time, everyone, good night.